Okay, you're very welcome back following the news, obituary notices and the quick break. It's good to have you back on the show. Some of the callers here are saying, will Bertie give up his state pension? Another, who introduced self-regulation in the building trade, including mica blocks in houses in Donegal? Bertie Hearn will sort out that mess. Another, I think it would be a big loss for Donegal if now, Doc, we're lost. I had such a bad experience down the country. Okay, that's a random one in on that issue. Remind Maria Walsh that the Irish went to work throughout the world not to get a free ride with handouts. Again, I'll just point out that 10% of the population of Donegal pre the war on Ukraine, and I'm just conscious in case they're listening and feel offended, live, work and have made their lives here as well. And I presume others are looking to attain that the same as we do when we travel abroad, as you've just quite rightly pointed out. My employer offered 4 houses at the start and nobody got back to him. He eventually gave up. It seems to be a few individuals who are getting the money. I know half a dozen people who, even under the latest round, 160-odd people, you know, the latest round of a call-out for homes, how many of them have been accommodated now at this stage, or how many of them have been used for accommodation? Fianna Fáil, living in the past, Bertie done a lot of good, but also a lot of bad decisions. I mean, he's not going to run for the party again. They just have welcomed him back as a member, and he believes he's got a role in progressing the situation in Northern Ireland and elsewhere. A caller says, why should someone with a holiday home be forced to give it up to solve a problem? No one should be forced to give up any type of their housing to fix a problem, but they should be given proper compensation for it if they choose to. You know, and that's what I was referencing. All the money seems to have gone, you know, in certain areas. If that money had been given to people with holiday homes, they may have been able to, they might have been encouraged to do so. But they weren't. They were offered 400 quid or something. 5,000 asylum seekers could not produce any documentation. That is worrying. The government's accepting that's the state of the situation at this stage. That being said, they are all photographed and fingerprinted and what have you. Political parties should be not be setting up hospital groups, especially as someone some are against abortion. That's a presume a reference to AIM2. But does everyone agree with every element of healthcare either? Do you know what I mean? I mean, presumably you can have a stance on an issue that is, you know, that is a part of hospital care, but still at the same time seek for a hospital to be improved in other areas, can't you? It's a question, not a statement. A caller says, every country needs border controls. Try to get into Australia, New Zealand, USA and many more without the right documentation. I want to mention that there's a raffle taking place in Boncrana Post Office today to win a number of hampers. It's to raise funds for Pieta House. So if you want to support Pieta House and potentially win a number of hampers, or one of a number, don't forget you can enter that raffle at Boncrana Post Office. Donna Marie, I just have the details of our next guest there, please, if you don't mind. I forgot to bring them in with me. If we keep changing our religion to please people, it's more or else non-existent. So many changes have happened with scandals. To me, I don't know what to believe anymore. Yeah, I can understand how it can be difficult to sort of find your place or space in all of it, especially if it might feel like the goalposts are changing. Can I identify with that parent concerned about drugs in Inishowen? Same story. Guards not interested. Don't seem to understand the principle that a drug dealer is like pollution. Eventually becomes rotten. No one wants to hear. And are more of you out there, more parents? That's just off the back of a caller who's from Inishowen. The young people in their house, or at least one of them, have now begun taking drugs. They believe they know where they're getting them. They believe they've passed that information on to Angada Síochána. They feel nothing is being done, and they're effectively losing their children from a Thursday to a Sunday as they go on a drugs binge. And I don't think they are on their own. Right, we're joined on the programme now by Sinn Féin Deputy Piers Doherty. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us, Piers.
Good morning to you, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Right, we're speaking in the context of the Donegal People's Assembly. It's taking place at the Ballar Arts Centre, Ballar Buffet, this coming Monday, the 13th of February, starts at 7 p.m. What is the purpose of this?
Well, the purpose of this, Greg, is it's an initiative by Sinn Féin for a start off. So we've had 2 people's assemblies already, one in Belfast and one in Derry, and they've been very, very successful. People are able to make commissions or make submissions in relation to where they see the future of Ireland, the challenges, the obstacles, the opportunities. So people can make submissions, and we've had a large number of submissions already. So you can do that through the Sinn Féin website, and the submissions will be published, or a range of them will be published at the end of these meetings. So the Donegal leg, as you said, is in the Ballor Theatre at 7 o'clock. And what this is about a conversation on Irish unity. What will a new Ireland look like? I've spoken your show before. I'm an Irish Republican. I get up every morning. I want to see an Irish unity. That's my raison d'etre. I believe it's in the interest of everybody. I think we will have a better health service, better education, better employment opportunities, and many other reasons. But it's not simple, and it's not a romantic idea of a fourth green field. To do all of that actually will require... It'll create huge opportunities, but it requires change. So we need to start thinking about what does it actually mean? What does it mean for our health system? What does it mean for our education system? Does the challenges we have in Letterkenny University Hospital, would they be addressed if we had a new All-Ireland health system or not? And that's the type of conversation we want. What we don't want, Greg, is we don't want just a Sinn Féin meeting, you know, full of Sinn Féin people, because we've been discussing Irish unity for as long as I've been around. What this is really geared at is... a wider conversation in the community, and that's why we have set it up in the way that it's set up, that there's an independent chair, that there's panelists there who represent certain sections of society or our interests in society. And I think the panel that we have established for the Donegal event on 7 o'clock on Monday is second to none.
And we'll talk about that and maybe run through it. But, you know, I mean, obviously, a lot of us, I tend not to, but a lot of us look at Irish unity or not as black and white, or green and orange for that matter. But this is a very, very different country, a country that's changing all of the while. There's many people that have very different views and some that have no views whatsoever. And when it comes to the question time, when that does happen, the people will want to know, well, what does that mean for how their current life changes? You know, they might feel better that the Six Counties is part of, you know, the wider new 32-county republic. But at the end of the day, you still have to get up on a Monday morning, go to work, pay your mortgage, access your GP, your school, your healthcare. Do you know what I mean? You might feel a bit better if that's what you want, but people want to know, well, what difference will it make in their lives? And I'm sure the people of Northern Ireland are very keen to sort of maybe have some insight to that as well, beyond really what a lot of the debate has been about heretofore.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, as I said, we want to kind of, you know, look, as an Irish Republican, I want Irish unity. But it's my job to convince people who maybe aren't convinced up until now that it's in their best interest, recognising that there are people out there who are unionists and aren't going to become non-unionists in the morning. You know, it's in the name. They believe in the union, and that's a legitimate aspiration to have. But there is provision in the Good Friday Agreement. It's 25 years old this year. It allows for a referendum on Irish unity. I think everybody, including unionism, accept that there is going to be a referendum. Obviously, they will fight tooth and nail to have, you know, the vote that they remain with the union. But we do see changes that are happening in the north, and the demographic changes that have been happening over many, many years. They're very, very clear. They're reflected in a number of elections in terms of unionism losing its majority in five consecutive elections. You know, something that was never supposed to happen 100 years ago, when the north was partitioned and it was gerrymandered and it was set up in the way it was set up, that, you know, a Protestant parliament for a Protestant people.
But the key thing is those votes aren't necessarily, or actually aren't, sort of transferring to sort of a nationalist ideology, or we don't necessarily know as well. You know, so
I think that probably the biggest straw in the wind is what happened in the assembly elections. You know, it was never, ever conceived when the North was created that you would have a Republican, a nationalist as First Minister in the North. And that just shows you what is happening out there in terms of changing. But you don't take anything for granted, okay? So we know that there's going to be a referendum. We will argue for a positive vote for a new Ireland in that referendum. But the crucial thing is, and let's not repeat the mistakes of Brexit, let's actually think it through, discuss it through, what does that actually mean? for us, we believe this is a unique opportunity. Very few nations have an opportunity to reinvent themselves. And this is an opportunity to reinvent ourselves, to actually not just to join the six for the 26 counties, because nobody's arguing for that. What we're arguing is about a new Ireland. And that means an Ireland that is inclusive. It's just what you said, you know, it's an Ireland very different from where it was.
Like a united Ireland might not be what Republicans or unionists envisage right now. It might be a completely different type of a united Ireland.
Absolutely. It's not me that will write the script or design which way what a new Ireland will look like. It has to be all of us. I want to have my part in it. I want to play my part in it as a Republican, as a leading member of Sinn Féin. But the key thing, and this is the reason why these meetings are happening, this belongs to all of us and it's going to affect all of us. When this referendum happens, and if there's a positive outcome to this referendum, then it does affect health, it does affect education, it does affect your quality of life, it does affect agriculture, it affects sports, it affects tourism, it affects everything. So let's have a conversation in relation to what that means. And it also means some very difficult decisions. You know, I can remember, you know, and I've made this point a number of occasions, a member of the Orange Order, who we've invited the Orange Order to this event. It's really important that we hear voices of people who aren't convinced and who are opposed, and all of that needs to be inclusive. But I can remember somebody from the Orange Order phoning me up and said, Pearson, if there was a united Ireland, would we be allowed to march on the 12th of July? And my argument is, of course. Like, the point here is that Orangism is a part of our tradition, it's a part of our heritage. And, you know, to me, our tricolour is the best symbol in terms of a new Ireland. But there's not one thread more green in that flag than there is orange. You know, and these are the type of conversations that we have, not just how those traditions of unionism would be included in New Ireland, but how would they not just be respected, but actually cherished? Because there are a million people, or close to that, that have a very strong different view. But there are demographics, there are things that are changing, which is showing very clearly, including in the polls, that a referendum will happen, that it's likely a referendum over time will be a positive outcome, which means we're going to have a united Ireland. And that's why we want to have an inclusive discussion. And we would love to see community groups, sporting organisations having these discussions themselves. This is our contribution to it. It's not about owning the space. It's not about dominating the space. There's civic organisations like Ireland's Future. They put 5,000 people into the Three Arena, where they had a massive inclusive and conversation on Irish unity. The, you know, the Taoiseach was there, the Mary Lou McDonald was there. You had, you know, famous actors and musicians were all part of it. And that's the type of inclusive discussion we want to have.
You know, you say, obviously, listen, Sinn Féin are a Republican party. They're organising this, so it's going to be seen a certain way. You talked about wanting to hear unionists' voice. This is the third, I believe. Have you heard them at these meetings?
Well, look, I've been involved in different initiatives in terms of Irish unity in the past. I can remember nearly a decade ago in Derry, where we had a big public meeting in the Millennium Forum there, where unionism were part of that discussion on the platform with myself and others, talking about why they don't want a united Ireland. We've had spring schools where we've had loyalists come to, and we've invited loyalists from to our spring schools, and they make these arguments. There's no point having a conversation just between ourselves. This conversation has to be inclusive. But if unionism don't turn up, that's okay as well, because for those of us who believe in Irish unity, it's about putting some meat in the bones. It's about actually looking at it in more detail. And that's why what we have done in this People's Assembly isn't set up a panel of all Sinn Féin elected representatives or speakers or all the rest. We have actually gone to the head of enterprise in the county, in the region, and asked that person to come up, the head of education, the former head of local authority, you know, experts in different fields in health campaigning. They are the people that we want to address. I don't know what they're going to say. But
I think most of what they're going to say is they're going to say that if it's ATU, we're working very closely with education in the north and it's working well. If it's the council, they're going to talk about the establishment of the city status. If it's the Letterkenny Chamber, they're going to be talking about how they work hand in hand to the mutual beneficial for both with, and you talk about someone who's creating jobs. It's about the Northwest being seen as an attractive region with no border for to come in and invest in. I mean, that's what they're going to say. But then how does that all, I don't mean that's that negative, by the way, but I presume that it is, because that's a lot of positive stuff there. But how does that progress the conversation, do you feel?
Well, I think like if you look at the panelists there, you know, you have the former CEO of Fúthras na Gaeltachta, Micheál O'Haney, who was a former director in Donegal County Council. He'll chair the event, so it's not just about what the panelists are going to say, and they'll answer questions and they'll give their own contribution. Yeah. Okay. But it's also people that are coming from the floor that'll have different views and different questions, and hopefully will, if there's lessons to be learned from the other two people's assembly, this will actually spread. It will encourage debate. It will, you know, people will come with their own ideas and their own challenges, and you know, and so on and so forth. But yeah, the experience here in Donegal has been, of course, we need to work across the border. Of course, we need to work on an all island basis. But in doing that, and we can see that with, you know, the great work that Donegal and Derry City are doing, and Derry and Strabane and local authorities. But we've still got all those challenges in terms of the border. We've still got all those challenges in terms of regulatory environment. So we want to hear what that would mean in relation to Ireland.
So where have they been? Where have you held them so far? There's one in Donegal. Where have the other two been?
Belfast has been the first, and Derry has been the second. So this is the third. There's a plan that this will go across, right across the island.
Yeah, because that's what would interest me. I'm not saying this doesn't interest me, don't get me wrong, but I'd be very interested to see what people in Kerry think, or what people in Cork think, or what people in Galway think, or how many might even turn up that aren't very, you know, ardent Sinn Féin fans, supporters, for example. Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone's going to have a say in this. If you go further south, are people less interested? Are they less likely to engage? You know, as I say, this is very worthwhile, don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting otherwise, but I think it's when you start heading down the extreme south of the country, west or east or central or wherever it might be, it'll be very interesting when that happens to hear what regular folk think.
I think it's a very good point. And my own view has always been this. If people recognise that the referendum is likely to happen in the next number of years, which I strongly believe it, and as I said, unionism, you know, the former leader of the DUP came to Glenties and says unionism needs to prepare for this referendum. There's an acknowledgement that this referendum's happening. So I think when people start to realise we're going to have a referendum on Irish unity in the next number of years, I think people will take a lot more interest in it, because they'll actually look and say, well, can some of the problems that they're facing in their ordinary daily lives actually be addressed in terms of Irish unity, and how can it be? Probably in the past, all they've really thought about, a lot of people, not stereotyping everybody, a lot of people have thought about, is a romantic idea of Irish unity, of, you know, the history that we learn at school, and the tensions between orange and green, and all of that, and the conflict in the north. The conversation that we're happening today, I would strongly argue that 10 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to have the type of event that we're having in the Ballor Theatre on Monday.
But you also might not have been using the same language that you're using now either.
And that's true as well. Although I would point to documents that we've published many, many years ago talking about an inclusive discussion.
I know, but
very hard issues.
You're choosing your words very carefully, and they do sound very inclusive. But I think that's part of maybe why we couldn't have had this. I don't want to put words in your mouth from 10 years ago. I'm just getting a sense that this conversation, maybe not with you, but with someone else, might have felt a little bit different. You know, I mean, because...
Well, I think it's a safe space for people to have this conversation now, because you're seeing, you know, as I said, you're seeing Ireland's future organising main big political events, big conversations in relation to Irish unity. You're seeing other political parties, the SDLP have their own initiative, Fianna Fáil have done some stuff on this here. Other members of political parties have addressed meetings that we've organised ourselves. You've got different civic societies that are doing stuff in relation to this here. And, you know, for us, it's absolutely fantastic that the likes of Paul Hannigan, you know, the head of ATU, our university here in the Northwest, is going to be one of the panellists. It's fantastic that Noel Duddy, who's been, you know, instrumental in relation to cancer services, which is based on a regional basis, cross-border, have been secured, is there to speak about the health challenges. You know, that we have the head of the Letterkenny Chamber of Commerce talking about the issues that she will want to address in terms of Tony Forrester, who's done so much in relation to, you know, enterprise here, not just in Donegal, but also cross-border, recognising the impacts of Brexit. Seamus Neely, our former CEO of Donegal County Council, again, being as one of the panellists, and Professor Terry Scott, like this is the Vice-Chancellor of University of Ulster, a board, former board member of the IDA, former president of Sligo IT. These are very serious people that are making their time available to have a discussion, to answer questions, to give their opinion on what is the future.
Yeah, and I presume all those opinions are being formed and are formed through conversations like this. But as we mentioned, and we'll wrap up shortly, Piers, but and I'll remind people of when it's on and how it can evolve. But this country, as we've said, it's changing all the while. This county is changing dramatically now. Its demographics are changing for a number of reasons. What is, and one of those reasons is going to be immigration and people moving it. What is Sinn Féin's policy, current policy, if in power today, in terms of immigration and recognising people's concerns? And I'm not talking about the extremes. I want to take that out of it and just focus on people with genuine concerns, right? What is your party's policy? What would you do now that's different to what the government's doing? Other than saying, well, we need to provide more housing, we need to provide more services, we need... I'm not about stuff that might take 5 or 10 years to kick in. I'm about now. What would Sinn Féin be doing now that's any different to the government, if anything?
Well, first of all, that is the issue would be doing different from the government, because regardless of which government's in place, you have international obligations in relation to people who are seeking protection in your country. That's the same in Ireland as it is in France, it is in Spain, it is anywhere else. When people are fleeing war-torn areas and seeking international protection, you have obligations internationally in relation to them. What you have an obligation as a government is to plan for that, to prepare for that. Now, we have unprecedented levels in relation to, as a result of the war in Ukraine. But we're a year into this now, nearly. And a year ago, the government were talking about 200,000 people that we would need to accommodate. A year on, we aren't at about a third of those figures. And we are at crisis point.
Yep.
There is a failure to plan here.
There is, of course, but let's just say there's a snap election and we are where we are, right? So would you be doing anything in terms of moving people into areas, different areas of the country? Would you be doing anything different in terms of people arriving here without any documentation? You know, just into the everyday work that would have to be done right now, what would Sinn Féin be doing now different to what the current government is doing?
Well, first of all, there's an old debate in relation to how people are processed in relation to international protection. We have many people who, for example, are in centres at this point in time who have had approval in terms of their international protection and their status to remain here. Yet they're still in centres because there is no accommodation for them. And so there's major problems, there's major backlogs. There are people right across the country, businesses who are actually offering accommodation in relation to people coming in here, and they can't get the accommodation approved because the department is basically is collapsing. Now, there's an unprecedented amount of work that department has gone through. I understand, for example, they've made a request for additional staff that was rejected by the cabinet.
Yeah. So say a business then, say a business in I'll pick a town, I don't want to pick, say Donegal town, right? A business approaches the department and says, we can accommodate here, we can accommodate, you know, 150 refugees, you know, and you're saying the government's dragging its feet in relation to that. Would you, do you think if someone offers the accommodation, it should be just taken up? Do you think there should be consultation with them? I'm moving the question forward, Pierce. I recognise.
No, I understand, and I'm just answering the point. That is not the point at all. It's not a case of somebody offering accommodation and therefore they're just taken up. First of all, what people expect is a response. That's the first thing. And I'm not talking about Donegal. I'm talking about different parts of the country here. The people expect a response. People expect to be able to be told yes, no, or maybe, or whatever. The issue here is it's not just about accommodation. It's about services. It's about making sure that communities are supported and equipped in relation to able to do it. So everything from schools to medical and all of that needs to be taken into account. The problem here is we don't have a strategy, a long-term strategy. Like, there is no strategy that the government have told us in relation to, well, where's the extra accommodation coming from, or how is it requiring it, or anything of that nature. So there is, and you're not just hearing it from people in the opposition. You're also hearing it, you can see it this week being reported by backbenchers in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and there is no information coming out here from.
So how would you be judging communities? How would you be judging, say, for instance, how many refugees Donegal can take? Are you saying you would do an assessment of GP services, school places, capacity in the hospital.
That's what happens. That's what happens, and the local authority has a role in relation to this. So the local authority has a role in relation to informing the Department of Children and Youth Affairs in relation.
So say all local authorities say, look, we are really at capacity here. All local authorities from Dublin to Cork to Donegal.
But they're not saying that. They're not saying that. See, this is the issue. They're not saying that. And if you look at certain parts of the country, you will see that there's a far lower level in relation to those seeking international protection, those fleeing war in Ukraine, than there is in other areas. So, you know, there has to be a proactive plan here. It can't be seat of the pants thing all the time. We recognise that this is a crisis, this is a war, this is unprecedented. But we are a year into this, and we don't have a plan in relation to where the accommodation is going to be acquired, and there is a lack of communication in relation to leaders in your community, whether they're elected representatives or not. What we get is we get an email sometimes not, there's an email on the day basically saying that X amount of people are coming to your community. There is no discussion whatsoever. Okay. Then we're trying to figure out, is the GP's been contacted? Has the school's been contacted and all of that?
The guards aren't even contacted in a lot of cases.
It's not good enough, right, in terms of the planning here.
Okay, well, listen, hey, in one form or another, I'm sure either directly or indirectly, this will probably form some of the conversation as well at the Ballot Arts Centre Ballot Buffet, Monday the 13th of February, 7 p.m. It's the Donegal People's Assembly, the Commission on the Future of Ireland. Sinn Féin are the organisers, but Pearce has made it clear that everyone is welcome. You turn up on the night or on the evening, is that how it's done?
You can register with Eventbrite. So there's a link there on all our social medias as well in terms of registering with Eventbrite. And a large number of people have registered already with Eventbrite, but you can also attend on the night. So we're encouraging people. We'd like to hear from community groups, representative organisations. As I said, I've invited people from the unionist community also to the event. But look, come have your say. If you don't like the idea, tell us that. If you think there's a question in relation to, you know, what some of the panelists should say, or maybe give your own thoughts, be part of it anyway, because this train has left the station, and in my view, it's only going to one.
You're gonna have to choose a different metaphor, Pearce, for up here. That might be fine down in Dublin. There's no trains leaving any stations around here. But that could form part of the conversation as well.
That's exactly the type of conversation, because why don't we have rail here in Donegal? It's because of partition. The All-Ireland Rail Review, the only chance of getting rail back in Donegal, I've raised this with the Minister, is an All-Ireland approach. Again, a lot of these things come back down to partition and Irish unity, whether it's health, education, jobs, economy, deprivation, rail, even trying to get into the European Cup finals or the World Cup finals. It all comes down to, should we have one team, should we have two teams, all of those kind of things. These are things that interest people, and have your say.
All right, thanks very much for your time, by the way. I think I took more of your time than you probably expected. But anyway, I just wanted to ask some questions of that would be coming in as well. Coming up after 11... it is just time to chill out a little bit. You know what I mean? We chat 5 days a week here. A lot of positive stuff, a lot of issues, trying to fix stuff. Hey, by the way, thank you so much. I find it a bit cringy talking about the listenership figures, because everyone does it, and I hate to be like everybody else. But that being said, we have to recognise something, that over the course of the last year, we've had a huge increase in people listening to the 9 till noon show. And even over the last 3 months, we've had thousands of more people tuning in. And the figures cover North Donegal. They're fantastic. 8 out of 10 people in our area here. 8 out of 10 people listen to Ireland Radio in the week. Isn't that remarkable? Only 2 out of 10 don't. And we're going to have to get used to listening to us on a weekly basis. But I think that's just absolutely phenomenal. But thousands more, 1,000, 2,000, and 3,000 more per hour, depending on the hour, tuning into this show, which is great, you know, because other news services, it's gone the other way. We're not news, just news, but you know what I mean? It's just great to see that we're bucking a national trend, and we really appreciate it. Highland Radio now, the second most listened to local radio station in the country. It's getting neck and neck in that regard with our old friends down at Midwest. West, but by far and away, we have the highest market share of any station in the country, local, national, international, it doesn't matter. Our market share is massive. And that's thanks to you switching on in the morning and staying with us all day or for long periods of time. That's what the market share is. So we really do appreciate it. And when I say that, I mean genuinely. Off air, we're talking about and going saying, well, haven't we the best listeners? And that doesn't include a million live minutes watched every month, a million live minutes watched every month across our social media for the show. We really appreciate that. And also our great friends out living in different parts of the world who tune in. Unfortunately, the figures don't count you as well. So all in all, we are continuing to grow. And in this day and age, it's fantastic. And it's all down to you guys. So thank you very much indeed. Let's go now to Ballywood, Ballyshannon. It's like Hollywood down there at the moment. Michael Daly operates Daly's Donegal Facebook page. He joins us now. Hiya, Michael.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Good to have you with us. Right, more power outages in and around Ballyshannon. You know, I'm sure you wouldn't be highlighting it, Michael, unless there was a bit of a trend and a lot of inconvenience ongoing. What's happening, do you think?
Yeah, well, Greg, I suppose most recently in the last 3 days, we've, in an area where I live but extends both sides of the River Erne heading out towards Baleek, we've had five outages in the last 3 days, and it's a trend that sort of I was beginning to notice it and sort of log it in the back of my head because I live in this area, and I wondered, I said, God, that's a lot of outages, because through neighbours I asked, did anybody have records of the outages, and then information came to me, and to cut a long story short, over a period of actually just less than a year, from the 14th of the 1st, 22, which is Valentine's Day last year, to today, there's been, from my figures, 14 outages in that time. So, I remember several times being here at home and the power going out, and kind of, it was almost a novelty to it at the start, because basically it was great to see all the technology being turned off in a house where teenagers tend not to talk to you. And so we actually played cards by candlelight and all that, but they soon got fed up with the cards, because constantly, which I don't know, but over exaggerate the problem, but right through February last year, and then it kind of waned but picked up again. October we had one, St. Stephen's Day another, and then in January and February it's not been good. We've had a lot of outages, and I was kind of reluctant to do it because I was personally involved in it, because I live here, but eventually I put a piece up on my own page, and I was taken aback by the reaction from others.
Yeah, Michael too,
because there's a lot of them who have a lot of detail.
There's a group of us that it's an inconvenience, isn't it? Like, you talk about, the router's down, you have to get the deck of cards out, what have you, but I'm sure there's a lot of people affected too, whereby, maybe young babies in the house having to boil kettles, make bottles, or people who are carers. Do you know, it sort of goes beyond inconvenience into actually really having a detrimental effect on people, and those are the ones I always try and sort of go to rather than think of myself, if you know what I mean.
Funny, one of the people who contributed, actually, I took a note, I kind of sort of anticipated your question, and I won't name her, but she's there on the page if you want to look at the comments. Fully reliant on electricity for heating, hot water and cold water, cooking and hybrid working, and I wondered about the cold water, but the reason for that is probably that the water system's on a pump, but that was the point that person made, and that kind of echoes the point you're making, because, I'm slightly nervous about complaining about being without power, because I can't sort of look at my laptop and that sort of stuff. But for a lot of people out here in this area, it really is affecting their lives.
Yeah.
And I understand that ESB networks have had a series of properly put together complaints from people basically outlining the extent of the issue. And to be fair, they have responded, and last week we thought we had crossed the Rubicon and that this might be sorted because they had crews in the area and everything was going well. Then the power went out again. So I'm not sort of sure what exactly is the problem, but in response to some of those complaints, the ESB said, and well, I read what they said. They said they have not yet found the fault on the line. They have teams of men working on the lines, and they've narrowed it down to a particular area, hope to have it resolved very soon. And then another comment from a person who got a response from the ESB said that the fault arises when there's a period of extended rain. And, you know, I'm not trying to be smart, but, you know, it's not the sunny South Donegal. We do occasionally get extended rain.
The odd spell of wet weather, yeah.
Branches and trees and that.
We should, and it is interesting to say that, because I think we probably have one of the most resilient networks in the country because of the weather that we get, you know, and we have great teams that go out and repair it. So when there's a niggly problem like that, and it's more than niggly for the people you've mentioned, we hope they get on top of it and provide the people of that part of Ballyshannon the same service that the rest of the county enjoys.
Yeah, yeah. And just for the benefit of your listeners, and it's very rural, Ballyshannon, as I say. It goes out the old Bleak Road. I'm not sure if people would be familiar with that, where I live in the Na. They're right out towards, and there's an irony here, where I'm talking to you from now in the house, as crow flies, there are two hydroelectric power stations about a mile and a half from me, and perhaps another 2 miles from me, there's a wind farm. So I know the two things don't tally. You know, we don't get our power directly from the wind farm or elsewhere, but that's sort of beginning to annoy people as well.
Okay, you can hear the whoosh of the turbines. You know, power,
but you've got you've got the turbines kind of running and the captains fall. And
all right.
Yeah.
Come here,
anyway.
Before I let you go, nadder or nather? Mm.
Nather for me. Yeah.
Now, come here, what is the either side here? What nadder or nather? Where does nadder come from? Why nather or nadder?
I don't know, but we always spelled the K-N-A-T-H-E-R, and now I see versions of N-A-D-E-R, but no, it'll be nather with a K. And I suppose the one thing, Greg, just to kind of, I sound like I'm being a politician here, but in fairness to the crews, many of them I know well. Some of them I was actually at school with, who've been out here during the night and all the rest of it. You know, they are doing as much as they can to resolve the problem. You know, if you've got 13 of those in 12 months and six of them in 3 days, people get a bit crispy about that kind of stuff.
I think so, and rightly so, yeah, of course, because it is a very expensive commodity as well at the moment, let's not forget.
Well, there is that, Greg, and the other thing I suppose I'm going to say, because some of your listeners might say, like, you know, in an area like this, it's not a massive number of people. I estimate it's probably affecting about, in total, 500 or 600, but, you know, we pay our bills too, so... That's why I kind of raised it on the page.
And we appreciate you sharing it then with us as well, Michael. You can check out more from on Facebook, Daily's Donegal Facebook page. Michael, thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Best wishes to everyone. Thank you very much indeed for that. That's Michael Daly, as I say, Daily's Donegal Facebook page, 086 60 25,000. Right, okay. I think the amount Ireland travelled out is not the same as just how much as how came in. We are swamped and on our knees. How you feel, I'm not in any way contradicting that, but 70,000 is a big number, of course, but should it swamp a population in excess of 5 million? Greg, we need to raise the issue of disabled people getting respite. Families are struggling and we need help. We'll come to that specifically rather than not just a text, okay? So I'll try and remember to start that on Monday, right? So we can afford that the time it clearly deserves.